Blog Talk Radio.
T-minus 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5. All three engines up and burning. 2, 1, 0, and liftoff.
Coach on Fire Radio.
Fire the sky!
Hello, this is the North Star Show with Lily Gardner, and I'm a consultant with the FBI, and I'm the spokesperson for an operation working to start a social movement to safeguard liberty and improve health and well-being. I chose the name the North Star Show because in the United States, during the time of slavery, in order to escape to freedom, the slaves would locate the North Star by encoding a symbolic song about the Big Dipper called Follow the Drinking Gourd. A gourd is a drinking ladle which represents the Big Dipper. The song Follow the Drinking Gourd instructed the slaves about clues to follow on the route of the Underground Railroad. Follow the drinking gourd, for the old man is waiting for to carry you to freedom. The old man waiting to carry you to freedom refers to the slang used in reference to the captain on ships who was called the old man, and the operative of the Underground Railroad, Peg Leg Joe, was formerly a sailor. Continue with the song. When the sun comes back and the first quill calls, follow the drinking gourd. That means start at the first sign of spring when the sun comes back and the first quill calls. Where the riverbank makes a mighty good road, dead trees will show you the way. Dead trees will show you the way meant a nail in a dead tree will point the way. Left foot, peg foot, traveling along, follow the drinking gourd. Where the river ends between two hills, follow the drinking gourd. There is another river on the other side. Follow the drinking gourd. Where the great big river meets the little river, follow the drinking gourd. For the old man is waiting for it to carry you to freedom if you follow the drinking gourd. The rivers referred to are rivers in Alabama leading to the Ohio River, which was the boundary between the North and the South. With my racial background being Mexican-American and half-Caucasian, it made me interested in the differences in cultures from a very young age. As a young child, I would spend all day every summer reading about slavery and other fights for freedom, such as the suffrage movement and the Salem witch trials. Later on in life, I started studying factors that influence desensitization. After a traumatic event in my personal life, I became interested in learning how to heal from severe abuse and learning to help abusers to change their behaviors. I realized as a graduate student in sociology that addressing the societal issues I was teaching my students about would take a social movement. A couple years later, the FBI became aware of me and chose me to be the spokesperson for a social movement operation. The traumatic personal experience that led me on the journey I'm on occurred when I was a missionary for the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints for a mission president who the FBI found in an investigation could have been tried for attempted murder for how he treated the female missionaries. I will speak about that experience on another show. A couple of years ago, I was writing a TV series to try to have an impact on society through the form of media, and I had titled my script The North Star. When I asked the Church of Jesus Christ to join with the FBI in our social movement and to rally the churches, they never responded to my letters. I felt quite discouraged and believed that if the churches wouldn't join us, maybe it was because of some personal weaknesses they saw in me. And because of their rejection, I decided to change the title of the TV series. A few nights later, I went outside at night to look at the sky, and there was cloud cover over everything in the sky except the Big Dipper and the North Star. So I felt it was a sign from God that he wanted me to call the series the North Star. I'm going to share a statement now that I have been asked to share. I'm a spokesperson for the FBI social movement operation, which means I'm not the official FBI spokesperson, but instead I'm the voice for a covert operation that was created because it is not politically correct for the FBI to say most things that need to be said. The FBI warns the world is kissing the feet of Judas. Or in other words, the world has been betrayed by those in power. There are forces working to clip the wings of freedom morally, mentally, physically, economically, religiously, and politically. Morally, Hollywood, the music industry, and the pornography industry are pushing more and more of what will destroy pure love. Psychologically, the mental health disability rate has increased by 600% since the 1950s. Robert Whitaker, Dr. Peter Breggin, and Dr. Anne Blake Tracy explain in their books that taking mental health drugs causes mental health crises by making people suicidal, homicidal, and psychotic. The FBI agrees with those who have come to the conclusion that the mental health drugs are fueling a mental health epidemic. Physically, recent research points to sugar, chemicals in the food, and an inflammatory diet as some of the root causes of many physical and mental health-related problems. Economically, the printing of money and massive national debt will cause the dollar to reach a point where it is worthless. Religiously, Pope Francis spoke to the United Nations recently, saying, "Rights must be forcefully affirmed by working to protect the environment and by putting an end to exclusion." BYU professor Larry Baxter has created a system to reduce carbon dioxide emissions, and his system deals with 99% of the CO2 from emissions and costs half as much as conventional methods. The FBI believes that a worldwide tyranny run by the United Nations established to forcefully protect the environment would not be an improvement, but that technological improvements such as Professor Baxter's are a much better solution. Politically, kissing the feet of Judas. Certain extravagantly wealthy families in the world control the media, the news, and the greater part of the government of the United States and other nations. These families have funded both sides of every major war since Napoleon in order to depopulate. They are planning a massive nuclear war on American soil in the future. The president of Argentina, Cristina Fernandez de Kirchner, explained to the United Nations that a former official from the Obama administration approached her in 2010 and asked her to provide nuclear fuel to Iran. An episode of For the Record on the Blaze TV network about Benghazi explains that the White House was warned in a detailed report on March 24, 2011, that al-Qaeda and other Muslim extremist groups were working with the rebels against Gaddafi and therefore should not receive weapons from the U.S. The FBI affirms that the death of Ambassador Chris Stevens was because of his objection to the Obama administration's involvement in running guns to al-Qaeda. How did the world get this crazy? Are most people blind or just plain lazy? We believe that heaven can be a place on earth by restoring love, morals, holistic health, and wisdom. Lisa Rankin, a medical doctor who now specializes in integrative health, says that by following certain principles, you can make the body ripe for miracles. The FBI believes it will take miracles to change the direction of society and stop the plans of those in power. We believe that the likelihood of miracles and synchronicities can be increased by learning certain principles. We believe principles related to pure love, energy, emotion, vibration, and transformation, as well as principles of freedom and integrity, need to be more fully understood and applied. Now, my special guest today, well, I have two guests that will be on, but my special guest today is Alex Spazer, who helps individuals to manage their emotions and empower their mindsets to transform their leadership abilities. His purpose is to act as a public speaker to teach correct principles so they can improve their lives and then improve their families and nations. So, Alex, are you on?
Yes, I am.
All right. So,
I just want to say thank you so much for having me on. Can I ask you a quick question?
Sure.
This is just out of my own curiosity. Why did the FBI get interested in starting a social movement? You asked me to come on the show, and I'm really excited to be able to talk about things with you. But I was pretty curious about, like, why would they be interested in starting a social movement? Because probably there's a lot of people out there, and me included, where I had kind of felt like a lot of people, or a lot of people within the FBI, maybe were incapable, had their hands tied to do something this positive. So, like, how were they able to do so? How were they able to get interested in doing this?
Well, to respond to that question, I'll quote from the movie National Treasure. You know, the Declaration of Independence scene?
Oh, yeah.
Ben Gates says, "If there is something wrong, those who have the ability to take action have the responsibility to take action." and we feel that something really needs to be done. The statement that I read is not an exhaustive list of the problems in the world. It's just examples of ways in which things aren't being addressed that need to be addressed.
Definitely. That's a very powerful quote. And to be honest, I might be kind of a National Treasure geek. I love that movie, and I love that quote, actually. That means a lot to me, because that's a lot of what drives my own life, is I really feel like you were saying about that, you know, if we have the ability, that we have the responsibility, and I firmly believe in that. I guess another question I have is that you talked about energy and everything, and I do a lot about energy and transformational principles in everything I do, because everything's tied together that way. But how does the FBI feel about energy and transformational principles?
My team told me a while ago, about a year ago, that my interest in energy healing and learning the principles of increasing miracles and synchronicities was a waste of time. but then they got to the point where they realized that we can't solve the magnitude of the problems in the world with the time that we have without coming up with almost magical solutions. To use a football analogy, we're going to have to make Hail Mary passes. And so they realized that what it will take to turn the tables will be energy and transformational principles, and which some people consider to be as mysterious as magic. But those who understand it know that it's just life.
Gotcha. Okay.
So, Alex, how does improving... So what you do for your work is you help people to improve their ability to manage their emotions and their mindset in order to change their families, their communities, and their nations. How does improving a person's emotional composure and mindset reverberate out into the community?
Oh, in so many ways. I find that I believe that every individual is completely powerful and is completely necessary. Not one person is better than the other. And when you go to an individual and you talk to them, you see that they have so much, I don't like to use the word potential, but because it's overused, but that's really what it is. Everyone that I meet, I can see in them that they have this incredible ability to do X, Y, and Z. Everyone's ability is different, but they have some power within them that they need to let out. They have to share and to expound. And what I have found is that every person's ability, no matter what it is and no matter what role they play, needs to impact the lives of other people. And so I work with the individual, and I find that when they aren't making that impact, when they aren't able to fulfill what I feel like is what I call life mission or your purpose, and they're not making an impact on people's lives, they're not creating positive change, what's holding them up is their emotions and their mindset. Their emotions can really tie them up in knots and keep them from moving forward, and then their mindset just continues that cycle of negativity, and therefore they become non-contributing. They don't make much impact on other people. They don't contribute much to not only their own lives, but the lives of their friends and family members. So when I teach people how to manage those emotions and make it possible for them to have that power, to empower themselves to create the life that they were always meant to create, and have the mind capability to keep those emotions in check, choose the emotions they desire, and expand their view as to what they can do and can accomplish, I find that every time I work with someone that way, they end up going out, usually their family members first, and they impact their family members. And because they went up in kind of a level of living, so do those around them. And when I say they move up, I mean they start to become better at living life. And better is measured by positive impact, like I was saying before. Better is measured by quality of life. And they improve all of those areas, and then it just continues to reverberate from there. It's like a ripple effect.
Right.
And you, if I try to focus too broadly and go for like, you know, one huge group, if I make it very faceless, I get nowhere. But when I focus on the individual, even when I'm teaching a day-long class and everything else, if I focus upon the individuals that are there, they create changes in their lives that then in the end, the very end goal is they are improving their communities and their nations, which does happen. Now, that's what drives me to do what I do is because I feel like I have an ability and a responsibility to take action because I see the problems that go on in the world. And the only way you can solve problems is really, it's not through technology. This is me, you know, this is my opinion. But from what I have observed and experienced, technology and all these other things can't solve the problems. It's the people. Because it's the people who experience the problem. So if you can change them, then technology and all those other things can only be contributors to it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very good. I want to introduce my other guest. His name is Ben Gardner. He's my brother. And I asked him to come on because he has a special message that from a childhood story that I feel like is the perfect example of someone sharing their creativity and their power and just a really neat little story. So take it away, Ben.
Oh, hey, Lily. Thanks for having me on. So, this is a story from my childhood. I've been doing some creative writing fiction recently, and I really enjoy it. I'm unpublished as of yet, but this is a story I wrote a while back from my childhood. And I think it illustrates one of your points, like you were mentioning, but you can talk about that after. So I'm just going to read it, and then Lily's going to tell how she thinks it applies and everything. But here it is. Bang, bang, elbow to the face, super punch. That was one of the fights going on between my action figures in an epic battle that I've since named the Stairway to Destruction. You see, I had moved my action battle to the top of the stairs because for the action figures, it makes things a little more interesting. It's basically like a cliff of death. The battle raged on, good versus evil, dinosaurs versus Star Wars characters versus Batman characters. Bam, pow, go back to the Jurassic Park from whence you came, you dinosaur, shouted Robin, with blood spewing from gashes on his arms and legs. When suddenly, in the midst of battle, everything started to spin. The world was going out of focus. Nothing made sense anymore. Down was up. Up was down. Boom, 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 thud. Slowly, everything came into focus. I found myself dazed at the bottom of the stairs. I had focused so much on the battle at hand of the action figures that I lost track of where I was and I had taken a rather unpleasant tumble headfirst down the stairs. Looking back, I like to think of it as a small victory for action figures everywhere. The action figures defeated the evil Lord Puppet Master who was making them fight, or me, by sending him over the cliff of death. So it's a funny story where the action figures got the best of me. And I think, I don't know if Lily was thinking it as sort of like one of those Hail Mary passes she was talking about or whatever, but go ahead. Thank you for having me on, Lily.
Thank you, Ben. Okay. So I felt like that really illustrates an example of someone being able to take on the evil Lord Puppet Master. And I believe that there are ways to win against when the odds are against you, and that is through learning correct principles, and that's also one of your beliefs, Alex. So your purpose is to teach correct principles, but there are some people who believe that what is correct is only a perception. I personally believe that God has left us a pattern in the North Star of a fixed point, that if we follow that fixed and constant point of reference, we can find our way through life. I believe there are correct principles that will bring out better results, just like there are reference points in the sky that led people to freedom. So what are the principles that you consider to be correct principles and that you focus on teaching your clients? Alex?
Some of the correct principles, or the principles that I focus on with my clients, are the ability to choose, the principle of choice, as well as the principle of faith. And I focus a lot on those two, as well as the principle of accountability. And the reason why is I believe that we all have been given this ability to choose for ourselves, to choose right and wrong, you know, and we also have this ability to take action in our life, no matter what it is that we're doing, whether we are just going to the store and buying some groceries or we are accomplishing amazing goals. Everything that we do in life is based on faith. And when I say faith, if that, you know, pulls a weird chord with you, then just say the word belief. But really, faith comes down to us taking action on something that we haven't already done. And that applies to everything. So if we know that we have a choice in all that we do, and that empowers us to then have more faith that we can then accomplish greater things. And being accountable leads us to follow through and follow up with what we have done. It leads us to make better choices because we recognize consequences. Because principles exist not as anything that's physically tangible or as something that anyone can change, though a lot of people try to change it. Principles are that eternal, always existing basis, that foundation for everything that we do, and those principles provide the consequences to all of our actions. So whether or not we are accountable, well, the principle of accountability remains, and good consequences come to us when we apply the principle of accountability properly, and bad consequences come to us when we apply it improperly. And about correct principles, for me, in order to understand what is a correct principle, I'm a religious guy. I turn to scriptures. But if you want to go outside of the scriptures, all you have to do is you just have to study history. Study the world history and all the things and events that have taken place and the choices and actions people have made. And you see what principles underlie everything they've done and how it created the outcomes they then experienced. Like what's going on in our country, I believe that we lived at that time around the early days of our country in the American Revolution. People were focused on principles, which led them to action, which led them to have that sense of morality in everything they did, which meant that they felt like what was going on in their life was wrong in regards to what the British government was doing to them. Therefore, they acted on it, and it created, in my opinion, the greatest country in the world. And, yeah, I'm biased, but I really feel that way. I really feel like it created one of the best things that has ever taken place in a government sense, in a nation creation sense. And there's been a lot of great things that have come from that, but nowadays our focus shifts. And people have all sorts of problems everywhere. And our nation, like you have already said, is going downhill and having a lot of problems. And if we're going to correct that, if we're going to know what we can do, then we have to understand principles and let our thinking, our thoughts, and our choices and actions fall in line with them in order to create the results you desire.
Okay. I want to share a quote from a book. It's called Born to Buy by Juliet Shore, and it says, today's average normal young person between the ages of 9 and 17 scores as high on anxiety scales as children who were admitted to clinics for psychiatric disorders in 1957. So that's just an example of one of the ways in which our society has been changing over time, because many people aren't following principles that will enhance their lives. Do you have any comments on that quote, Alex?
Yeah, it makes me think about how, regardless of what can take place in our lives, regardless of the circumstance, if we fix ourselves on principles, we can still have a positive outcome. That, if that makes sense, is that an okay answer for you?
Yeah, that works. Yeah, okay. I have another quote here that I absolutely love. It's from the book called, it's called Sister Revolution's French Lightning, American Light. And it's about the difference between the French Revolution and the American Revolution. And it says, the French wander in the dark because they prefer lightning to light. And so it was talking about how the French were really into action and killing people without having a foundation, or there was a real difference between the principles that were used in the French Revolution and those that were used in the American Revolution. The American Revolution was based on, they had thought things through and set up the best government that they could based on the best of what they could find in literature and in through prayer and all of that. And the French Revolution just was a theory that got out of control. how do you think that society is wandering in the dark if they don't follow principles?
Oh, in every way. We are truly in the dark because without principle, without that giving us and allowing us to have sound judgment, we're going to make lots of mistakes. And we see lots of mistakes take place. Like you were sharing about the French Revolution. And I love history. I study a lot about history, and especially just this past year, I studied a lot about the French Revolution. And you're right, without principle, people act mainly on emotion. And from my professional experience, that never really turns out when they act on emotions like that, when they come swinging in. So when you can manage yourself properly and focus, you give yourself that basis of principles, then you can actually have an idea of what the end game, of what the result can be. Just like the Founding Fathers, they prayed, they studied lots and lots about different types of government and different philosophies and everything before taking action. And their taking action was out of a sense of duty for what was right, not out of a sense of they deserve this or that sort of privilege. They believed that they had certain rights that were unalienable from them, that they were inherently bound to, they were supposed to have. And so any exercise against that was in fact immoral, was in fact wrong. And because they did base it on principles, we see today that they made the right choices because it led to a success. It really did. The American Revolution was just that. It was just that one revolution. It wasn't like the many, many revolutions that took place in France.
Right. Okay. So I have here, are you familiar with the marshmallow study at Stanford with the 4 and 5-year-olds?
Yes.
So I feel like that is one of the, like, patience is one of the principles that is really important as well in society, because it's one thing that goes against consumer culture, and so consumer culture is kind of overpowering in many ways the children's ability to have patience. But so I'll explain the marshmallow study. At Stanford, they placed 4 and 5 year olds in front of a marshmallow, and they were told if they waited to eat the marshmallow until the researcher came back, 15 minutes later they could eat another marshmallow. The researchers checked with the students after high school and found that those who were able to wait for the second marshmallow were happier and more successful. Years later, those who were not able to wait still could not put off gratification. They were also more troubled and less self-confident. The average child in American culture doesn't learn about patience, discipline, or work because of the influence of the media. And this is this we see as a real problem. How do you, is patience one of the things that you focus on, or just?
Yes, it is. It is a big one that I focus on. I don't always necessarily call it patience.
Oh, yeah.
And sometimes, depending on the client that I work with or the group that I'm working with, I'll avoid that word because of the stigma in their minds against that word. Because a lot of times when they say that word, what comes to their mind is a mom or a dad that going, you know what, you just need to be more patient. And so that puts me in the mom-dad mode, and they don't like that. But when I teach them how to have success, how to abide by success principles, which allow them to manage their emotions and change their mindsets to actually create really good results, I just teach them persistence, if that makes sense. To be persistent,
yeah,
with what they're doing, because often people are looking for changes instantaneously. And to be completely honest, I do provide with my clients, I can provide them with transformational changes in just one session.
Yeah.
But I do know that if I want that to be lasting, I have to instill within them a desire and understanding and belief that they have that skill to be persistent with what I just taught them. Because anyone can be like, for example, I think of a lot of people who come off addictions, and anyone can be like, yeah, I'm healed, you know, I no longer have any issues with alcohol if they were addicted to alcohol. But because they looked for that instantaneous result and they felt like they got it, well, then the temptation rears its nasty little head in a different way. And it's all about plugging those holes of a weakness.
Right.
And so patience really does plug in those holes. Patience in applying correct principles. Patience, I know a lot of people who, I guess it, you wouldn't say the word patience, but they patiently wait for a miracle, but the wrong sort of miracle, a miracle that wouldn't come to them. They patiently wait for someone to give them all the money they could ever want without having to work for it.
Oh, yeah.
And that doesn't get them anywhere. So it's all about working towards it and recognizing and experiencing and enjoying the rewards that come from that.
Right. Okay. All right. So do you happen to use any movies or any media to explain concepts to your clients? Do you have homework that is media related? Just curious.
I don't. There has been one YouTube video that I found that I thought was quite inspiring and also hit the nail on the head for certain things. And so if I feel like a certain client needs the video, I send it to them. But for the most part, everything I do, I walk through with them without the assistance of media, except music. I do use music at times.
Oh, okay. Huh. Yeah, when I taught at the university level, I I used a lot of scenes because I feel like movies can teach principles that in powerful ways. But so I was going to ask you what movie you used.
Well,
if you do.
Yeah. Well, can I? I'll share with you then. I did a class last Saturday, and in that class, I did share two short videos, and probably my favorite one to use is they're both funny, which is good because it awakens people up to what they're learning. And then I tie it into really what it's showing. One is it's not about the nail, because in order for people to understand how reality works for them and for others, they have to understand that emotions completely create the reality that we live in. But my actual favorite video, I believe it's just called Bad Cat Jump, and it's this orange cat, if you don't mind if I explain it to you, it's this orange cat that is on top of this car, and the roof of the garage is like right there, so close by, but it's snowy, and the cat is slipping a little bit, and it's getting ready for its jump, and it slips a little bit and catches itself, and then it gets itself all ready and squared up. And then you can just see that it puts all its power and effort into one really great, powerful spring. But unfortunately, because it was slippery, it went up about 2 inches and it fell off the car.
Oh, no.
And as funny as that is, I share that because, to me, it powerfully teaches what it's like for people. People are that cat. We are all in some way or another, or at some point in our lives, that cat. And we see this goal, we see this great thing we can accomplish, we see this impact we can make, we see this level of life that perhaps is within our grasp. In fact, we feel it, and we're like, yes, it's right there. But we have all the slippery stuff around us, and that slippery stuff is living incorrectly, you know, not living according to correct principles, and also having those emotional problems throwing them off, having those emotional setbacks that causes them to distort their own reality, and that's what, you know, that's why they continue to live at the state that they are living in. It's because of their emotions determining their thoughts. And that's why I tell people, I help them relate, like, you are that cat, and it's hilarious, right? We see that cat try so hard to get on top of that roof, and then falls off the car. Well, if we don't do something about that, if we don't learn how to manage our lives, then we're always going to have that snow there. We're never going to get our footing. We're not really ever going to quite reach that roof.
Okay, cool. So I had thought to share some of my experience that led me to learn about energy and transformational principles on another day, but I think I'll do it now. So I served as a missionary for the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, and my mission president was from Mexico, and he had a really hard time with the female missionaries. He wouldn't let us go to the doctor, and he wouldn't let us, if we asked to rest, he would say, no, you can't rest, you can't go to the doctor, there's something wrong with you because you're asking to go to the doctor, so you need some depression medication because it's all in your head. And so he would have the women put on extreme dosages of Prozac for asking to go to the doctor. And so then we had 3 attempted suicides, and because it seemed like the only way to get out of the situation was to attempt suicide, since if we asked to leave the mission to go to the doctor, to go home, he would say no, that we couldn't leave. And so it was a really scary situation. I got out of it because I ran into a person, a man who had been in a similar situation on his mission 10 years earlier, and he had been actually, he decided that the best way to get out of that circumstance was to get in a fight with one of his leaders. And so he told me that, and when I was needing to come home, someone started a rumor that I had hit someone, and so I didn't deny it, and it was justification for me to be sent home. And so then I could get in touch with the leaders of the church through a letter explaining how bad things were. And so I wrote the letter, and they didn't really do much about it. They had a talk with him, and that was all. And 10 years later, I wrote another letter. I spent a year on it because I wanted it to be like a thesis and to be really well done and really powerful and present as much of the story as possible. So I spent a year writing it, and I sent it off after that year. And the one of the leaders of the church responded just saying, you know, we're sorry that you had this experience, and no one should have an experience, a negative experience on their mission. And he passed it on. And then one of the other leaders of the church spoke about it in General Conference, which is the body speaking to the whole body of the church. And as he spoke about it, he said that he said that we believe in healing, but we also believe in doctors. But then, and so I was pleased with his talk addressing the problem in the mission. But then he started kind of talking, quoting a scripture that had been used abusively in the mission that I had explained in the letter had been used abusively. And he said, he who sacrifices his life for my sake shall find he has eternal life. And I think that's a great scripture when if someone is, I mean, it's a fine scripture, but I had explained to them that sacrifice can become murder when it's brought upon you by someone else. And so the church clearly hadn't understood how dire the situation was. But the FBI became aware of the letter that I sent to the church, and I became a consultant at that time for the FBI. And then a few years later, I was thinking about it and decided to talk to my team about it. I was like, you know, we need to do something about this, about the church not believing how bad it was. And so I asked them to, well, so my team said that I would need to ask another part of the FBI who's not part of a covert operation to do an investigation on the mission and then speak with the church about it. So they did that investigation and found that he could have been tried for attempted murder. And they went and spoke with the leaders of the church about it. And it, and they presented all the information that they found. They spoke with the chiropractor on the general board, on the general missionary board, who found that, who told them that many mission presidents don't let people go to the doctor and they don't know why. And so they explained that they need to do better about health problems and all that. And especially not giving people extreme dosages of things that will make them suicidal and homicidal and psychotic. But another thing that happened that was interesting was that after I sent that letter to the leaders of the church, God sent President Hinckley, who was the former president of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, as an angel to me. And so I was, I saw him as an angel. He was all dressed in white, and he had died a couple years earlier, and he had a white cane with him. And angels don't need canes. They don't usually have canes. And so I know that the cane was a symbol. And when the movie Rise of the Guardians came out, I decided that President Hinckley's cane represented Jack Frost's staff on the movie Rise of the Guardians. My mission story is incomplete without watching the movie. You can't understand the message without really watching the movie, but I can try to explain some of the lessons that I learned from that symbolic visit from an angel. In the movie Rise of the Guardians, Jack Frost's staff in his fight against evil remind me of Moses in the Bible and his staff. And in the same way that Jack Frost and Moses are great guardians, I was called at that time to be a guardian, to be kind of like the spokesperson for the social movement. And so Jack Frost in the movie is called as a guardian of the children to protect them. And he stands with Santa Claus, the Easter Bunny, the Sandman, and the Tooth Fairy in an exceptionally dangerous time when pitch black has learned to simulate dreams and turn them into nightmares. And pitch black shatters the hopes and belief of the children until there's only one small child left who believes. This child named Jamie Bennett had the privilege of seeing the guardians, of seeing Jack Frost, Santa Claus, the Easter Bunny, and the Sandman and the Tooth Fairy. And so like Jamie, like this little child who was the only one left who believed in the movie, I've not only seen guardian angels or seen that angel of President Hinckley when he came, but I have also had a special privilege of speaking with God in a dream. I stood before God as he sat on his throne and spoke with me as a friend. And in the movie Rise of the Guardians, Jack Frost tells Jamie that he needs to be a guardian too. And I think that it's one of my responsibilities to tell others that they need to stand up and just like you do, Alex, and empower people to stand forth and change themselves and be guardians of their lives and guardians of the world. Jack Frost started to be successful as a guardian when he found his center, or what he can contribute to the world through his unique talents. He finds his purpose. And someone explained to me that they fall prey to an addiction when they lose sight of their mission in life. I think it's really important, like Alex, you teach, that people need to find their purpose. And Jack Frost finds his center is fun. And when he realizes that, then he's able to be successful and stand against the evil in the world. There's one more message that I want to share from Rise of the Guardians. So the pitch black turns the globe at the North Pole totally black. And so Santa Claus sees that and recognizes that pitch is up to something, that something's going on. And just like pitch black can turn the whole world dark and take control of the whole world by getting rid of the guardians, the New World Order is trying to take over the world, and they will establish a worldwide empire or tyranny. And this has been something that has been concerning to the FBI for quite some time. J. Edgar Hoover said that the individual is handicapped by coming face to face with a conspiracy so monstrous he cannot believe it exists. Former FBI agent W. Cleon Skousen wrote the book The Naked Communist about the plans for a worldwide empire, and then he wrote the book The Naked Capitalist explaining how many of the wealthiest capitalist families in the world are funding the worldwide takeover. And one of the things that they did first to start this worldwide takeover was take over the media. And there's a specific video that I really like that shows how scripted the news is and how someone is like that master puppet, just running the news. But Conan O'Brien has a video online called Newscasters Agree, A Christmas Present or Two or Ten. And the video shows 24 newscasters around the country saying the same script with very little variation. And it's a really, it's kind of funny. It was meant to be funny because Conan O'Brien is a comedian. But it's not that funny when you think of the implications of the media being scripted to down to the very words that are being said on the local news stations, and that a lot of truth isn't able to get out through a lot of the news that people think is news. That's just what those who control the news want the nation to be hearing. Do you have any comments on that, Alex, about, would you like to say anything about my mission story or anything that I've commented on?
Yeah, it maybe, it took me to a lot of different thoughts. And one thought is that we don't have to wait for something dramatic, right, to happen in our lives, like what you experienced. Not many of us would experience something that hard. And I would hate it if people wait to have something that dramatic and traumatic to take action to do what is good and do what's right. I would hope that people would move themselves to do what's right. But often they don't know how. They need someone to be a leader and a guide for them, and as a mentor, personally, as a coach, that's what I strive to be. I strive to be someone who can help them and kind of uplift them, because I believe that's what true leaders do. True leaders inspire and help us move to take action. At least good leaders help us to take good action. Yeah, if that makes sense.
So how can people get a hold of you to contact you for more information or to work with you as a coach?
Oh, so yeah, they can go to facebook.com/nexusmentoring. Right now we're having to build up the website a bit more. So the best place to contact would be facebook.com/nexus. That's just like that Google phone, right? Nexus, Nexus Mentoring. Or they can contact me through my phone. I'm during business hours. That's 9 to 5, and that's just, my number is 925-428-1963. And I'd love to help anyone, kind of find their purpose like you were talking about.
Okay, great. People can contact me with questions by going to the Facebook site Standing for Liberty Movement group. And I want to end with quoting a song called Open Up Your Eyes on the CD Many Different Roads. It says, "So many times we walk through life never caring about the other guy, still we hope things will change, but if you look inside their eyes, you'll find the kids have grown as cold as ice. Now we must make a change. Oh, Lord, help me to see what in the world can help what's happening to you and me. If we open our eyes, maybe we can find a change in tomorrow. Maybe it's already written in the sky. If we open our eyes, maybe we can finally change the world of sorrows. Maybe it's already been here all the time. Open up your eyes. So much to do, and there's no time. So much to say, and nothing's on their minds. So we'll see you next time on the North Star Show. Thanks for being here today, and thank you, Alex, and have a great day.
Thank you so much. All right. Bye.